up one day with nothing much to do. He tried to put his street clothes on, but couldn't find his shoes. The night before, he tied one on, now cobwebs filled his head. By afternoon, he called in sick, and then went back to bed. The next day, he felt shaky, but he made it off to work. And goaded to increase his pay and take another perk. Although the people cried out loud and told him what to do, instead of trying to cut the cost, he increased revenue. Yippee-i-yo! Yippee-i-yo! Tax hikes are on the way. And he said, tax them, tax them, tax them. Though it breaks their backs, tax them where they run, where they hide. In winter's freezing weather, if we can't tax their sweater, we'll try to tax the hair off their hide. My congressman just voted yes to increase foreign aid. Nation's infrastructure's worn and torn and frayed. While veterans and nation sons become the unemployed, since NAFTA passed those aliens, we'll gladly fill the void. Yippee-i-yo! Yippee-i-yay! Is on the way. I say we hang 'em, hang 'em, hang 'em till their toes are dangling. Stretch those faders' necks, hang 'em high before they up and bust us. Let's use old-fashioned justice and go out and get a rope and hang 'em high. Senator just voted yes to pass the Brady Bill. He thinks if he can take my guns, it's him that won't be killed. He doesn't give a hang about the crime he helps create. As long as bribes keep coming in, Americans can wait. Yippee-i-yo! Yippee-yah-way! Vengeance is on the way. It's time we hang 'em, hang 'em, hang 'em till their toes are dangling. Stretch those traitors' necks, hang 'em high before they up and bust us. Let's use old-fashioned justice. Go out and get a rope and hang 'em high. Check 'em out, size 'em up, hook 'em up, bite 'em out. If they're in, vote 'em out. If they're out, cut 'em down. Snag 'em in to the court, every trade or result. Use your vote like a rope, hang 'em high. Hang 'em high. Yeah!
You got that right, Carl Klang.
Negroes, San Negroes, Somali Negroes, Ethiopian Negroes, Chinamen, Vietnamese, Koreans, and other Asians, and so on. This week, to support the kickoff of America's Most Racist City contest, I dedicate the La Mesa Oktoberfest that is taking place on the 4th, 5th, and 6th of October. Many old and young Nazis and so forth will join the festivities. Many skinheads and assorted white races are boosting the La Mesa Oktoberfest as a major celebration of white racism in San Diego region. Tom Metzger will also announce the Most Racist City Contest on KFI Radio, 12 midnight Saturday, the 5th, 640 on your AM dial, the Scott Green Show. Tom Metzger also wishes to represent the white racist in the upcoming National Love Crimes Conference in Washington, D.C., where I hope to speak to the president.
I don't normally give my competitors a plug, but in this case, you know, they can have all this they can handle. That KFI, that's where they do the makeup shows. They get a guy that's supposed to be a caller, and he's not really a caller, and he goofs on people. And then I guess this guy's going to kick off the San Diego Most Racist Show. Well, I guess the kickoff's sort of blown now since we just announced it. But that notwithstanding, Tom Metzger is going to join me here in just a second to tell me why specifically he believes San Diego needs to be the most racist city in America. And, yes, I could ignore this, and it could grow and fester and get larger, or we can meet it head on like we do everything else.
Rick Roberts.
6:10 the time. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Court of Public Opinion. I'm Rick Roberts. This is News Radio 600 KOGO. Your voice, your opinions on the issues of the day, the issues that affect us all. 569 Talk in San Diego, 569-8255. Free throughout Southern California from San Diego to Santa Barbara, 1-800-600-KOGO. And on your GTE mobile net, it's #600. Free call. Okay. The last time that I talked with this individual, got all sorts of complaints, all sorts of mail and faxes. And, oh, by the way, I just remembered. Yesterday, if you were listening about the door-to-door fundraising for the kids. Now, the resident racist for Southern California has got to be my guest, Tom Metzger. I've talked with him on many occasions, and he makes no excuses for what he is or what he says. Now, what I'm going to do, for those of you that are just joining us, and I know the phone lines are already filled up. Well, no, I take that back. We've got one open line. I'm going to play for you something that you may have heard at the top of the hour. If you didn't hear it, I'm going to play it for you right now. It's about a minute and a half. And then we're going to step aside, bring up my guests, and start taking your calls. This is not a joke. I'm not yanking your chain. You know, certainly San Diego has its share of problems that we need to deal with. Every city does. It's how you deal with those problems that truly measures your character. This, I'm not exactly sure where this falls. Perhaps Mr. Metzger can tell us. So if you missed it the first time around, here you go. We'll listen to it, and we'll step aside for some business. We'll come back, take your phone calls, and talk with Tom Metzger. All right, play that first.
Hi, San Diego, you lucky town. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Tom Metzger, San Diego Ambassador of White Racism Worldwide. Many of you are not aware, but a new and very important contest has been created with San Diego in mind. Oh, but remember, you have lots of competition from around the country. It's the most racist city contest. San Diego qualifies, since any area that is pushing integration always breeds lots of racism. I'm a white racist, as you all probably know by now, meaning I believe in the fact of race and wish to see my Euro-American race on top, so to speak. The nation's most racist city, which includes all the smaller cities in the region, is a label to wear with distinction. Much of San Diego's racism is the closet type, such as that which flourishes in the rich white areas of La Jolla, and most of the beach areas where a few token non-whites deflect criticism. The bulk of overt and healthy racism is in the white working class neighborhoods that are being overrun with mestizos, Negroes, San Negroes, Somali Negroes, Ethiopian Negroes, Chinamen, Vietnamese, Koreans, and other Asians, and so on. This week, to support the kickoff of America's Most Racist City Contest, I dedicate the La Mesa Oktoberfest that is taking place on the 4th, 5th, and 6th of October. Many old and young Nazis and so forth will join the festivities. Many skinheads and assorted white races are boosting the La Mesa Oktoberfest as a major celebration of white racism in San Diego region.
Well, there you go. That's quite a bit of it.
That's
quite a bit of it right there. And Mr. Metzger, did you really say all that?
Good morning, Rick, or afternoon, or evening. Yes, I did.
All right.
That.
I know you did. Hang on just a second, because a lot of people want to talk to you about this, and I'd like to find out what this is all about as well. We'll step aside for just a second, come back with your voice in the Court of Public Opinion. And, let me stop right here. Hang on just a second. I got people calling up right now saying they're turning off their radios. Bring him back up for a second. Tom, did you know people don't want to hear this kind of nonsense?
That's fine. I turn a lot of people off, too. So what? There's a lot of people do. Your ratings will be higher than ever.
Well, no, I want to think about this for a second.
I can give you the greatest ratings in Southern California.
Oh, my ratings are just fine, Tom, without talking about racism every day. Is this a legitimate contest?
Absolutely. I've been promoting it on my phone lines up here in Fallbrook for some time, several weeks, to people all over the country. We're getting coming in from all over the place, cities all over the United States, where activists are, and they're joining into this contest to find out which is America's most racist city.
Yeah, are you going to move to whatever city that is?
Well, that's possible.
Well, there
that's
you go.
That's possible.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, maybe a little good news. Who knows? Your phone calls and Tom Metzger next.
Rick Roberts.
6:21 the time. Good afternoon. I'm Rick Roberts. The court of public opinion, your voice, your opinions on the issues of the day, right here on News Radio 600 KOGO. And you know, while it seems as though everyone in the nation is trying to figure out how to bring the races together, how to form some communication, how to sift through the chaff, the agitators, if you will, and get right to the root problems of race relations, there continue to be those people that that keep the pot stirred. And this guy, the Southern California resident racist, Tom Metzger, is certainly no stranger to this. Mr. Metzger, let me ask you something, if I may. This little contest you've got going on here, what's the prize, by the way?
We haven't actually detailed all the prizes yet, depending on how large this becomes. But from the way it looks, it'll probably be a trip for a few people from the most racist, a lot of the activists around the country, to go to the most racist city and have press conferences and so forth.
What for?
So that could end up with all the major racist leaders around the country visiting San Diego and having press conferences and touring the border.
Okay, first of all, this has got, are you joking? Are you kidding me? Or is this a...
The people who are entering it are serious, and I better come through with it or they'll probably come and get me.
Gosh, that'd be a shame. Who's entering this contest of yours?
Well, it's amazing. I've gotten entries from even as far away as Wichita, Kansas. You know, I never thought of Wichita, but everyone that calls in explains exactly how these cities are segregated. Tulsa, Oklahoma, I didn't know it, that most of the blacks are south of a certain avenue there in Tulsa. I don't have the name of it right in front of me. I'm getting all this information I never knew before.
Why does it do your heart good? I don't know if that's the right term. Why would you want San Diego to be recognized as the most racist city?
Well, I think because we are on the front lines here. It's sort of like the Alamo, like the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, trying to hold off millions of people pouring in here from Central South America and Asia.
Tom. When are you going to get over this, Tom?
No, I'm never going to get over it, because I believe that white people and people of other races have the territorial imperative to separate themselves and be separate if they like, and the government should stay out of our business.
But when, Tom, when are you going to get over this?
I don't think I'll ever get over it. I'm 59, almost 60 now.
Well, you just serve, by the way, somebody give me the mortality rates on white guys. You just serve to create a further divide between the races.
Hey, I bring out the truth, Rick. Everybody knows that all this closet racism, you know it, I know it, it's all over the place. It's endemic in this country. The blacks are right when they say that, and I agree with them.
Okay, Tom, hang on a second, all right? Hang on a second, because I'm going to give someone a chance to speak her mind without being jumped on. Certainly, you know, you do this for a living. You agitate for a living, Tom. You know it. I know it. Everyone else knows it. And you know, I'm kind of upset about this contest thing in San Diego. I'm gonna give this lady a chance to speak her mind without having a racist interrupter. And Tom, I know you're a big enough man. You can handle that, can't you? Can't you? All right. Let's go to Beverly. Beverly, hi. Hello, Beverly. Oh, I'm sorry. Hello, Beverly.
Hi. I want to tell you I really enjoy your show, but as the other listeners, I was thinking about turning it off because I didn't want to be upset. Today is the holiest day of the Jewish New Year. I think you probably are aware.
I am aware of that.
And it's a day of redemption and renewal. And, you know, everybody's in a happy mood, and we're dealing with this new year. And And just to hear the hate and the disgust and this insanity that this man proclaims, I mean, and to think that there's a contest and he's so happy about the response, I think that is a sad day to hear that, and I feel just sick to hear him and to know that. Here he is, he's almost 60, he's not going to change. He thinks it's so funny. I think he's a disgusting human being, and some of the things that he does to other people should be done to him.
Beverly, and first of all, I agree with you, okay?
Yeah.
I do agree with you. But what better day to expose that which further creates a divide between the races than on a day of redemption, on a day of cleansing, on a day, and I am not Jewish, by the way, but I certainly respect your faith. What better time to shine the bright light of day on that which keeps us all divided, to some degree or another? Beverly, I thank you for the call greatly. Please do not be a stranger to the show. I understand how you feel. And you want to respond to that?
I'd like to respond. I'm a little shocked because I guess most Gentiles don't realize that most of these Jewish holidays have to do with genocide against their enemies. In Purim, they wiped out everybody, and most of their holidays celebrate murdering people.
Tom, let me ask you something. If I got together a bunch of people, where would you like to live?
Well, the point, I'm making a point. I mean, either it's true or it's not. The woman calls in and says, oh, this is a high holy day and all that kind of stuff. Of course, I planned this just for that. But the point is, most of those holidays are based upon killing people.
What does Oktoberfest have to do with the most racist city?
It's a traditional German fest, and when I was in Germany in the 50s, I used to go to the Oktoberfest in Munich and the wine fest and so forth, and it's a wonderful time, and it's a Germanic tradition, and they carry it on greatly there. And of course, they got a big German-American club out there and all that, but everybody can...
All German people are not racist like you, Tom.
Of course not. A lot of them are cowards, just like most of the people running around today.
So what you're saying then is, you are saying whether you are German, no matter what you are, if you don't come, if it's not your way, it's the highway.
I'm just saying that you can work against your race no matter what nation you come from. Being a German doesn't make you a good white person, and being a Frenchman or anything else. I mean, you can either work for your race or work against your race.
Well, wait a minute. How about if I work at being a good person regardless of what color I am?
Well, I think it starts with being good to your family and wanting your grandchildren to look like you, and then it goes from there to your extended family, which is your race, your particular species of people. And I think it's normal to do that.
Tom, hang on here just a second. My lines are full, and you wouldn't believe some of the people that are on hold wanting to talk to this guy. Southern California's resident racist, Tom Metzger, has come up with something yet again that we can all certainly be proud of, and I say that obviously very facetiously. The nation's most racist city contest. I guess he wants to represent white racists in the upcoming National Love Crimes Conference in Washington, D.C., and he hopes to speak to the president. Yeah, Tom, that's going to happen. Not even Clinton probably wants to talk to you, Tom. Tom, hang on, I'll be right back.
Gee whiz. Rick Roberts.
The court of public opinion from San Diego to Los Angeles and beyond. 569 Talk, 569-8255 in San Diego. Toll free. All over Southern California, 1-800-600-KOGO, and on your GTE mobile net, it's a free call, #600. Your voice, your opinions on the issues of the day. All right, I got this thing earlier today, and you all know who Southern California's resident racist is. That's Tom Metzger. He's having a pretty good time with this. He's got a contest now. The nation's most racist city, and I guess Tom, you are asking that San Diego be nominated in that running. Is that correct?
Actually, I nominated it. I thought that it could do very well. Oh. It may not win, but it could come close at least.
Okay, but you don't have the prizes yet. No new Winnebago or
no. But yeah. It depends on how many entries and so forth.
Sure. And I guess you're kicking off this this little racial activity at Oktoberfest in La Mesa. Is that
yeah,
right?
I thought that would be it. We're inviting all the redneck races from all over Southern California, neo-Nazis, skinheads, just plain everybody. Just come on down and and enjoy.
Tom?
I'll be there tomorrow night.
May I ask you something? And please don't take this the wrong way.
No.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Actually, I feel great. I don't think anything's wrong with me.
All right, let's go to the phones. Shiren, is it Shiren? Is that
yeah.
correct?
Shiren. How you doing,
Rick? Good.
If you may allow me this time, just please, I mean, I will be most respectful to Mr. Metzger. Just allow me this time.
Go ahead.
Please don't cut me off.
No, go ahead. Just
okay.
don't say anything that the FCC,
no.
I mean, I've
no,
got enough problems with them already.
Nothing will be a
right.
detriment.
All right.
Mr. Metzger, I am a Negro, and I support your right to do what you're doing.
Good.
And, you know, I'm from the school of Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan.
I respect him highly.
And from Pat Buchanan.
Well, I don't respect him as highly as Marcus Garvey.
Okay. Well, you know, the first thing I'd like to say is, you know, I just don't want you just to advocate violence like the Grand Wizards of, you know, George Wallace and the others. I just don't want you to do that.
No, I'm not advocating my people do anything to black people. We just want to separate.
Yes, sir. Okay, I can appreciate that. And I respect your First Amendment right to assemble.
Well, I'm glad you do, because the universities and all these great learning places that talk about free speech surely don't.
Okay. Mr. Metzger, can I ask you just a couple questions?
Sure.
Just this first question. Have you served in the military?
Yes, I have.
Okay. You served in the Marine Corps?
No, I was in the United States Army Signal Corps.
Okay. Then I'll answer that. But you do respect the fact that blacks do serve in the military, blacks, Mexicans.
That's true. As I get older, I can't quite understand it, because it would seem to me that they sort of shot themselves in the foot by serving in these foreign big corporate adventures.
Okay, well, here's another one.
You know what I mean, don't you?
Yes, sir.
The white, poor, blacks, everybody got screwed.
Yeah, Tom, he gets it.
I can understand that, but, I mean, it's all for the good of America, which we both love, correct?
Corporate America.
But we both love, correct?
Well, what do you mean, love?
Love the country?
I love the geography.
The country?
I love the country as it's laid out.
Okay.
I love Fallbrook better than any place else, though.
Okay, that's all I want to know. I just want
Chamber
to know.
Chamber of Commerce loves it when I say that.
Yeah.
Okay. But my neighbor, he flies a Confederate flag over his balcony. Huge Confederate flag. I mean, it's
yeah.
bigger than my American flag, my military flag, my state flag in California that I fly out here at the ranch. And
Go ahead.
He and I are, he considers me a good friend, and I consider him a very good friend. I'm from Georgia.
Yes.
I am from Georgia.
Over 200,000 black people fought on the side of the Confederacy. So,
I understand that.
Sure.
But, I mean, I'm not saying that was, you know, that was any good, because my family fought on the side of the Confederacy, too.
Shiren, we got to wrap this up.
Okay, I'll wrap it up. I appreciate the fact that the gentleman from Ruby Ridge got acquitted because he was under a specific law of double jeopardy. But what I wanted to get to was the fact that We can, you know, and I love Oktoberfest too, but we can get to an agreement that, you know, you don't have to name a racist city or what have you. We can just come to the agreement that we're going to agree to disagree, but we can still get along.
Can I
give an agreement for that?
Get along with a lot of non-white people and black people and so forth, and you come up to Fallbrook and ask them. I've never heard anybody in this town of color. And I've never had anybody else hurt anybody of color. But I have my opinions, and I want to be heard, and I think it's a legitimate position to argue and debate, and I want to have the doors of the universities and so forth open so we can debate these things.
Shiren, thank you for the call. Lorraine, thank you for waiting at a payphone, I guess.
Yes, only you, Rick Roberts, would have the nerve to put on a wonderful racist like Tom Metzger. How are you, Tom?
Great, Lorraine. Good to hear you.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something, Rick. I can respect Tom Metzger because you know what? He's not a closet racist like the rest of these racists out there. He's a white racist, and he admits it, unlike a lot of conservatives I know.
Yeah, especially all those people over there in La Jolla and down on the coast, those rich ones.
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
And you know what?
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're not painting with a very broad brush now, are we, Mr. Metzger?
You know what? I grew up out there in La Mesa, and the Oktoberfest is very racist, Rick.
What's racist about Oktoberfest, Lorraine?
Well, for example, it has always been known. I take it from someone who grew up in the city of La Mesa.
Well, every city has an Oktoberfest.
Listen, it has always been known that the La Mesa Oktoberfest was to hang out for open racist people. But I don't mind that. You know, if you're going to be open and be a racist, I welcome you.
Well, I tell you what, I do agree with Lorraine on one thing. If you're going to be a total jerk, at least be a total jerk out in the open so everybody can recognize it.
Only a talk show guy could understand that.
Yeah. Lorraine, thank you. I appreciate the call very much. Let's go to Alan in La Mesa. Alan, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi, Rick and Tom. Yes, I'd like to nominate La Mesa as the most racist city in the whole world.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That's a big one.
Yeah, well, it's got the Oktoberfest, and it's got Helix High School, which is pretty much the capital of all hate crimes.
Wow.
And it's also the La Mesa Police Department, or PIC Department, has been putting out flyers themselves, I understand.
Oh, Alan, they have not.
Wow,
you know, they
man.
Have no. What, Tom, what do you mean, wow, man? The only people putting out flyers are a bunch of uneducated kids with bad haircuts
hey,
and
look,
combat boots.
A black man is safer dealing with us in La Mesa than he is with the cops in that town.
Hang on a second. Robert, is Oktoberfest racist, yes or no?
No, it isn't. Well, if it is, I'm not aware of it. I just want to say I'm planning on being there Sunday. I'm going to be working security in the beer garden. And Alan, you know, I got to ask you a question. You know who the mayor of La Mesa is?
Am I still on?
Yeah, Alan.
Oh,
it was picked up. Okay.
That's
Alan, who's the mayor, Alan?
I believe it's Art Madrid.
Is he a white gentleman?
I don't know.
No, he's a mestizo.
I think he used to be in the fascist league or something.
I'm just wondering how racist La Mesa could be if you've got a Hispanic for a mayor.
Oh, he's token. That's a token mestizo.
Tom.
It's a cover-up, I think.
Tom, relax. I know you're having fun here, but hang on.
Well, they put these guys in all the time. These white,
oh,
these cowards.
Hey, Tom. Let me tell you something.
All the time.
This Oktoberfest is not a racist forum.
Well, you know, you can try to make it whatever you want.
Okay, now we get to the truth. Oktoberfest in La Mesa is not a a racist forum. Tom Metzger wants to make it one.
Hey, Ray.
I used to have meetings in all these German-American clubs around the state in the back room. Guess what went on in the room in April?
Well, I went on the back room in April.
April 20th.
Well, what happened, Tom?
Adolf Hitler's birthday.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
I'm just telling you, it goes on.
Yeah. Robert, closing comment here?
Well, I just want to say, look, I think the Oktoberfest, you have to take it with the spirit that it's put on. It's put on for families to come out and have a good time, enjoy themselves. And it really isn't put on to promote some racist
Well, I'm
agenda.
Coming down there just to have a good time,
hey,
too.
Hey, Tom, I hope you do, and I hope you enjoy yourself.
I'll buy you beer.
Why don't you leave the chip at home?
Oh, no. I got to beat the drum for white people because it's hard to get a platform
Tom,
anymore.
Tom, I don't need you to beat the drum for me.
Oh, you do. You do more than you know.
No, I don't. I really don't.
Oh, well, in a few years, there won't be any more white talk show hosts. You'll be up there in Denver, up in the mountains, and that'll be it.
All right. Robert, thank you for the call. Tom, hang on a second. I've said all I've said in this hour to say one thing about Southern California's resident racist Tom Metzger. And I'll tell you what that is next.
Heat Radio 600, KOGO.
6:50 the time. Good afternoon. It's the Court of Public Opinion for Southern California. I'm Rick Roberts. This is News Radio 600 KOGO in San Diego, 569-TALK, 569-8255. Toll free from San Diego to Santa Barbara, 1-800-600-KOGO. All right, I'm going to go back to your phone calls. Hang on just a second. Now, Tom, before you get on goofy on me here again, I want to say something serious, all right? I want to say something serious.
Okay.
You know, many things go through my mind, Tom, when I talk with you.
Yes.
First of all, the thing that runs through my mind, at a time when we're trying to improve race relations, just, you know, I don't mean to sound like a warm, fuzzy, free-to-be-you-and-me type guy, because you know I'm not, but I mean, when we're just trying to figure out how to talk to each other, let alone getting along, I'm thinking, man, you know, Tom Metzger, after a lifetime of all this, white power crapola, I mean, you know, if he would just say, you know what, You know, the races are never going to be separate. Blacks are not going to go back to Africa. All the white people that came from Europe aren't going back there. We're all going to try to figure out how to live here some way, some way. If you would turn this around, you would be the media darling of the planet. Do you know that?
But the point is, I didn't create this problem. This problem was created by the central government of the United States for economic reasons by jamming and ramming and passing laws and forcing people together that don't necessarily want to be together.
Well, then take your fight to the Capitol and stop pitting people against themselves. Just
normal
people.
Well, I would, but all the Ryder trucks are rented tonight.
Oh, now, Tom, do you know what you just inferred there?
Yes.
Do you mean that?
Well, we have a book we're putting out, the Civil War II, and I'm saying if the government doesn't back off a little and quit trying to and quit suppressing some ideas they don't like, then bad things happen. You know that book, Bad Things Happen to Good People?
But, Tom, you just made the inference that all the Ryder trucks were rented, therefore you couldn't take a Ryder truck up to the Capitol.
Well, they're Sons of Liberty, you know. And those guys in the Revolution, they don't talk about this in school, but they did some pretty nefarious things.
Are you telling me, Tom, that you could see yourself doing what Timothy McVeigh has been convicted of doing, yes or no?
I can't see myself doing it. I don't think I have the guts that Timothy McVeigh had.
Oh, geez, Tom. Tom...
That'd be really something. When a Palestinian wraps dynamite around himself for his country and his people and walks in to blow up a place and blows himself to pieces, I say that's a hell of a man that loves his race and his people that much.
That's a moron, Tom.
Well, we had people in the United States military during World War II that purposely dive
That's
their fighter
coward.
Planes into the enemy.
That's a coward. Walking in all wired and killing innocent men, women, and children, that's not a man.
Don't
that's
ever
a coward.
Don't ever say a man willing to strap on nitro and walk in and pull a plug is a coward.
He now, is a
you
coward.
Can call him a terrorist, but don't call him a coward.
He's a terrorist coward.
Well, anyhow.
Because he doesn't believe in that enough to do whatever it is he's going to do and then stand accountable for the action.
Well,
that's what makes him a coward.
People of all groups, I mean, in Israel, the Jews, they had the Irgun and they did all kinds of these things. And if they threw themselves on a hand grenade, they were great heroes. I don't know. I don't really want to get into the Middle Eastern thing because I think we should get out of there and quit giving anybody any money.
Okay, Tom, let me say this because I digress here. Hmm. You know, Tom, I think you, as a spokesperson for whatever white supremacy groups that you speak for, I think, and don't take this the wrong way, but I think you're pretty much harmless.
Hang on
just a second. But what is not harmless and what troubles me greatly, you've got a bunch of these uneducated kids with bad haircuts and combat boots that rally around you, and they're the types that are going to jump in those Ryder trucks and do something very, very terrible.
Well, acceptable to the United States military if they want to go over and fight for the big corporations of this country and get their brains blown out. Okay.
Tom, this doesn't bother you
if
at all, though, does it?
If they decide to fight for their territory and their jobs in this country, they're bad.
All right, let's take some phone calls here very quick. I'm running out of time. Stephen Talmadge. Steve, hi.
Hi. First-time caller, Rick.
Thanks.
You know, I was listening to Sinister Massacre. Just been getting ready to put out an album by Benny Goodman, a well-known Jew. Actually, I just have a question.
Sure.
For Mr. Massacre. Do your racist views come from hatred of other races, or you just simply want to... just like hang around people that you like and are just simply more outspoken about it?
It starts from wanting to be free, as I was told I was in school, and this was a free country and we could associate and gather together who we wanted to and buy and sell with who we wanted to and so forth, until a time where the government said, you can't do anything the way you want to, we're going to tell you to do it, and then all kinds of other groups and pressure groups got into it to where they've created this situation. And I have obviously evolved. I wasn't this radical when I started.
So what you're saying is you're mad at the fact that you were forced into integrating with people that you probably otherwise wouldn't have.
I'm saying we should have had the option, because when I began in the so-called right wing and as a conservative a long time ago, I wasn't a racist at all.
Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't anti-Semitic. Today, however, due to the actions of the government and people who have acquiesced and benefited by the acts of the government, I am an extreme person.
But Tom, again, your fight, as I listen to you talk, and you have changed over the years, as I listen to you, your fight is not with people of color. Your fight is not with Jewish people. Your fight's with the government.
Get them off our back so we can have some programs of separation and have some territorial imperative for people. And so the black people, the white leaders, can sit down and solve problems. You're never going to solve anything with these crooks in Washington today.
Well, but Tom, sit down and solve problems. You just made an inference about all the Ryder trucks were rented. How does that solve anything?
I'm inferring, and I make no bones about it, that if the federal government continues to push, people are going to continue to push back. And if you don't, a lot of people are not going to like the way it happens. But, you know, people living at the time of the American Revolution, the average guy would have said, "Oh my God, did you see what those guys did?"
We're not talking about the Revolution, Tom.
Born in Revolution.
We're not talking about history lessons. We're talking about 1997, Fallbrook, California, Tom Metzger, and the way you see the world and what you do to benefit or detract from the community.
I see, number one, the world as a group of people who want to become so totally rich and control everything in a one-world type situation to stamp out all culture, all racial lines, everything, religion, you name it, so that they can play their games and sort of...
Hang on a second. Chad in Escondido. Chad, hello.
Hi, Tom. This is Chad. I'm stationed over here at Camp Pendleton. I just want to tell you, we got a lot of guys over here that really do support you, and I do too. And I'd just like to know, how do I get in touch with you? And do you have a webpage address or anything like that?
Yeah, I do, but it's easier. P.O. Box 65 in Fallbrook. Tom Metzger, Fallbrook. I don't care where it's coming from. I'll get it.
My lines, as always, Tom, my lines are full. Jay in El Cajon, a first-time caller, wants to nominate El Cajon for the Miss Race of the City. Mike in Claremont, first-time caller, all for the contest. Ted in Escondido, you just spoke with. Camp Pendleton employee. Eric in Blossom Valley, first-timer. Question for Tom. Unfortunately, Eric, I'm out of time. Pat in Imperial Beach, a first-timer, agrees with you, Tom. And John in San Diego, who does Tom represent? Well, he just said he represented himself. Tom, I'm out of time. As usual, I need to go take a shower. Thanks for spending some time with me, and we'll bring you up to date on this if this turns out to anything. Well, here's my closing song, kids. You dedicate it to whomever you think is most deserving, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. I'm Rick Roberts. See you tomorrow at 4 in the Court of Public Opinion on News Radio 600 KOGO.
The new Cold War promises untold riches for the military-industrial complex, causing hawks inside the Obama administration to push for more hostilities with Russia, as in a Syrian case study dissected by Gareth Porter for Truthdig. By Gareth Porter, airstrikes by the United States and its allies against two Syrian army positions September 17 killed at least 62 Syrian troops and wounded dozens more. The attack was quickly treated as a non-story by the U.S. news media. U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, claimed the strikes were carried out in the mistaken belief that Islamic State forces were being targeted, and the story disappeared. President Barack Obama waits backstage before making his last address at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, September 20, 2016. Official White House photo by Pete Souza. The circumstances surrounding the attack, however, suggested it may have been deliberate, its purpose being to sabotage President Obama's policy of coordinating with Russia against Islamic State and Nusra Front forces in Syria as part of AU.S Russian ceasefire agreement. Normally the U.S. military can cover up illegal operations and mistakes with a pro forma military investigation that publicly clears those responsible. But the air attack on Syrian troops also involved three foreign allies in the anti-Islamic State named Operation Inherent Resolve, the United Kingdom, Denmark, and Australia. So, the Pentagon had to agree to bring a general from one of those allies into the investigation as a co-author of the report. Consequently, the summary of the investigation released by CENTCOM on November 29 reveals far more than the Pentagon and CENTCOM brass would have desired. Thanks to that heavily redacted report, we now have detailed evidence that the commander of CENTCOM's Air Force component attacked the Syrian army deliberately. Motives behind a Pentagon scheme. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter and the military establishment had a compelling motive in the attack of September 17, namely, interest in maintaining the narrative of a new Cold War with Russia, which is crucial to supporting and expanding the budgets of their institutions. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter. When negotiations on a comprehensive ceasefire agreement with Russia, including provisions for U.S. Russian cooperation on air operations against Islamic State and Nusra Front, appeared to gain traction last spring, the Pentagon began making leaks to the news media about its opposition to the Obama policy. Those receiving the leaks included neoconservative hawk Josh Rogan, who had just become a columnist at The Washington Post. After Secretary of State John Kerry struck an agreement September 9 that contained a provision to set up a Joint Integration Center, JIC, for U.S. Russian cooperation in targeting, the Pentagon sought to reverse it. Carter grilled Kerry for hours in an effort to force him to retreat from that provision, according to the New York Times. Lobbying against the JIC continued the following week after Obama approved the full agreement. When the commander of the Central Command's Air Force component, Lieutenant General Jeffrey L. Harrigan, was asked about the JIC at a press briefing September 13, he seemed to suggest that opponents of the provision were still hoping to avoid cooperating with the Russians on targeting. He told reporters that his readiness to join such a joint operation was going to depend on what the plan ends up being. But the Pentagon also had another motive for hitting Syrian troops in Deir Ezzor. On June 16, Russian planes attacked a remote outpost of a CIA-supported armed group, called the New Syrian Army, in Deir Ezzor province near the confluence of Iraq, Syria, and Jordan. The Pentagon demanded an explanation for the attack but never got it. Four senior leaders of the Pentagon and others in the military, a strike against Syrian army positions in Deir Ezzor would not only offer the prospect of avoiding the threat of cooperating with Russia militarily, it would also be payback for what many believed was a Russian poke in the USI. Evidence in the investigation report on September 16, General Harrigan, who also headed the Combined Air Operations Center, CAOC, at Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, set in motion the planning for the attack on the two Syrian army bases. The process began, according to the investigation report, on September 16, when Harrigan's command identified two fighting positions near the Deir Ezzor airport as belonging to Islamic State, based on drone images showing that the personnel there were not wearing uniform military garb and, supposedly, displayed no flags. Map of Syria. But, as a former intelligence analyst told me, that was not a legitimate basis for a positive identification of the sites as Islamic State controlled because Syrian army troops in the field frequently wear a wide range of uniforms and civilian clothing. The report contains the incriminating revelation that the authorities at CAOC had plenty of intelligence warning that its identification was flat wrong. Before the strike, the regional station of the Air Force's Distributed Common Ground System, which is the Air Force's primary intelligence organ for interpreting data from aerial surveillance, contested the original identification of the units, sending its own assessment that they could not possibly be Islamic State. Another press strike intelligence report, moreover, pointed to what appeared to be a flag at one of the two sites. And a map of the area that was available to intelligence analysts at CAOC clearly showed that the sites in question were occupied by the Syrian army. Harrigan and his command apparently claimed, implausibly, that they were unaware of any of this information. Further evidence that Harrigan meant to strike Syrian army targets was the haste with which the strike was carried out, the day after the initial intelligence assessment was made. The investigation summary acknowledges that the decision to go ahead with a strike so soon after the target had been initially assessed was a violation of Air Force regulations. It had started out as a deliberate target development process, one that did not require an immediate decision and could therefore allow for a more careful analysis of intelligence. That was because the targets were clearly fixed ground positions, so there was no need for an immediate strike. Nevertheless, the decision was made to change it to a dynamic targeting process, normally reserved for situations in which the target is moving, to justify an immediate strike on September 17. No one in Harrigan's command, including the commander himself, would acknowledge having made that decision. That would have been a tacit admission that the attack was far more than an innocent mistake. The Der Etzer strike appears to have been timed to provoke a breakdown of the ceasefire before the JIC could be formed, which was originally to be after 7 days of effective truce, meaning September 19. Obama added a requirement for the completion of humanitarian shipments from the Turkish border, but the opponents of the JIC could not count on the Syrian government continuing to hold up the truck convoys. That meant that Harrigan would need to move urgently to carry out the strike. Perhaps the single most damaging piece of evidence that the strike was knowingly targeting Syrian army bases is the fact that Harrigan's command sent the Russians very specific misleading information on the targets of the operation. It informed its Russian contact under the deconfliction agreement that the two targets were 9 kilometers south of Der Etzer airfield, but in fact they were only 3 and 6 kilometers away, respectively, according to the summary. Accurate information about the locations would have set off alarm bells among the Russians, because they would have known immediately that Syrian army bases were being targeted, as the U.S. CO author of the investigation report, General Richard Coe, acknowledged to reporters. Who is in charge? General. Harrigan's strike worked like a charm in terms of the interests of those behind it. The hope of provoking a Syrian-Russian decision to end the ceasefire and thus the plan for the JIC was apparently based on the assumption that it would be perceived by both Russians and Syrians as evidence that Obama was not in control of U.S. policy and therefore could not be trusted as a partner in managing the conflict. That assumption proved correct. Vitaly Ichurkin, permanent representative of the Russian Federation to the UN, addresses the Security Council meeting on Syria. September 25, 2016. UN photo, when Russia's ambassador to the United Nations, Vitaly Churkin, spoke to reporters at a press briefing outside a UN Security Council emergency meeting on the US attack on Syrian troops, he asked rhetorically, "Who is in charge in Washington? The White House or the Pentagon?" Seemingly no longer convinced that Obama was in control of his own military in Syria, Russian President Vladimir Putin pulled the plug on his U.S. strategy. 2 days after the attacks, Syria announced, with obvious Russian support, that the ceasefire was no longer in effect. The political diplomatic consequences for Syrians and for the United States, however, were severe. The Russian and Syrian air forces began a campaign of heavy airstrikes in Aleppo that became the single focus of media attention on Syria. In mid-December, Secretary of State Kerry recalled in an interview with the Boston Globe that he had had an agreement with the Russians that would have given the United States a veto over their flights. He lamented that you'd have a different situation there now if we'd been able to do that. But it didn't happen, Kerry noted, because we had people in our government who were bitterly opposed to doing that. What he didn't say was that those people had the power and the audacity to frustrate the will of the President of the United States. Gareth Porter is an independent investigative journalist and winner of the 2012 Gellhorn Prize for Journalism. He is the author of the newly published Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare. He is the author of the newly published Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare.